This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. President Bush and Russian President Vladimir Putin had warm words, but no firm agreements today as they spoke to the press after 3 days of talks at President Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas, and in Washington. Despite all the backpatting and joking, President Bush admitted that the two still had a, quote, difference of opinion over missile defense. But by all accounts, the two world leaders are personally closer than ever since September 11th and its attacks. In just half an hour, we'll bring you our NPR-exclusive interview with Vladimir Putin, where he'll take questions from listeners across the country. But first, we're taking a closer look at the man now charged with leading the new Russia through this new era. Joining us to raise the curtain on tonight's unusual broadcast is Marshall Goldman. He's an economics professor at Wellesley College and associate director of Harvard University's Russian Research Center. Good evening, Professor Marshall Goldman.
Thanks.
Good to see you. Also with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio, our own special coverage news analyst, Jack Beatty, a senior editor with the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Marshall Goldman, there's no precedent, I guess, for a Russian or Soviet formerly leader coming on American radio, but you were saying just before we came on that there is a precedent behind what's happening tonight.
It turned out that when President Clinton was in Moscow last, in his folksy way, you know, his town meeting format, he asked if he could go on Russian radio, and radio station happened to go on, turns out to be one that was under threat by Putin taking it over, suppressing freedom of the press. But anyway, he went on it and he answered questions by phone in exactly the format. So when Putin's trip was being discussed here, his people said, we want to do the same thing. And so they went to NPR and that's what we're going to hear.
So this was actually Putin's entourage saying, hey, equal airtime.
Equal airtime. I'm sure that the people in Washington, NPR, said, twist my arm. You know,
right, right. No problem. You're on. Jack, we remember the stories of Khrushchev in the cornfields of Iowa, I guess, and other moments, symbolic moments, when Soviet or Russian leaders tried to reach out to the American public. But this is really something new, don't you think?
It is. I don't remember anything like this. Marshall would have a catalog probably of instances, but the closest I do remember is Mr. Khrushchev in was it Farmer Garth's field out in Iowa?
Roswell Garth.
Roswell Garth, talking about how, well, the corn was as high as an elephant's eye out there. It was even higher in the Ukraine.
But then he went out. Actually, remember, he went out to Los Angeles, to Hollywood.
Uh-huh. And
And he had this thing where they were doing the can-can, which he took a little offense at, but this was a public meeting in a sense, but nothing like this radio call-in.
We are a long way from Khrushchev pounding his shoe on the podium.
That's right.
In New York. Marshall Goldman, we're going to hear directly from Vladimir Putin in less than half an hour now, but help us out. Give us the background of this man. First, who is Vladimir Putin, and then help us understand his rise to power and its significance.
He grew up in Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. He grew up in a family that was relatively poor, although his grandfather actually had been in the KGB, or the counterpart of the KGB, was the cook for Stalin and Lenin, which meant that you had to be vetted. So he's gone.
I guess that would be a critical position.
So in a sense, he's gone into the family business when he went into the KGB. In high school, in 1968, he went knocking on the door of the KGB office in Leningrad and said, I want to join, and said, don't call us, we'll call you. What was, for me, important at that point was that 1968, remember, was the invasion of Czechoslovakia, and to want to join the KGB at that point,
when it's being seen as so oppressive.
Very oppressive, and not an enlightened group. He went on then to law school, this is what you did as an undergraduate. And sure enough, the KGB did contact him at that point, and he served in Leningrad for a while. Then he was sent to East Germany, which gave him some exposure, and he learned German quite well, so well that he could address the German parliament in German. So anyway, then he went back to St. Petersburg, now St. Petersburg, worked with the mayor in charge of international business, more or less keeping an eye on it. That's what the KGB did at that point. His boss, the mayor of St. Petersburg, lost the election, and he was jobless. Then somebody in Moscow called him and said, come work in the Kremlin in administration. And that's where he ultimately caught Yeltsin's eye and then simply rose up as different staff positions, and then the head of the KGB, and then prime minister.
How recently was he head of the KGB?
Well, until he was appointed the head of the party of the prime minister, which was in 1999, August 1999.
Mm-hmm. George Bush has famously said that he looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes and saw a man he could trust. Was that the
absolutely
phrase?
Absolutely.
But who is he? What kind of man is Vladimir Putin?
Well, the story I told about joining. Wanting to join the KGB in 1968 suggests the man who likes order, who believes in that kind of thing. And then I can just add to that. This comes from Putin's more or less memoir, which is called First Person, which is really very short but very interesting. He also describes what happened when the Berlin Wall came down. And he was then in the KGB in Germany, right next to the Stasi, the secret police, East German secret police, and the Germans were rioting outside. The East Germans were rioting, and he was worried that they were going to go next to him, go get him. So he called Moscow, and he said, "What do we do?" And the answer, "We don't know," or basically, "Nobody's there." And this discussion he has a feeling the world has collapsed. So what kind of man is he? In answer, he's a man who likes order. He's a man who likes discipline. And that's what makes his appearance in the United States so contradictory to the way he was at home.
Does that mean he would not like American society, or that he would not like the chaos that Russia has seen in the last decade?
I think he would not like the chaos that Russia has seen. And that's, in fact, Yeltsin was under pressure to appoint somebody from the KGB to bring order. And one of the things public opinion polls now show, when they ask, "Why do you like Putin?" they say, "Because he brings order." And that's, again, the image of the KGB. In fact, the two prime ministers before Putin were also from the KGB. So after Yeltsin, there was this kind of craving for some kind of order and discipline.
Jack, do you see this affection for order as maybe a common plank between Putin and our own president?
Well, yeah. I mean, and also the CIA connection. I mean, George Bush Sr. was the head of the American KGB or CIA.
Not exactly the same as Stalin's cook, a little higher position still.
little higher status there.
But also not a field agent, and that also makes a difference. I mean, George Bush Sr. was basically an administrator. I don't want to dismiss that, but there is a parallel.
Sure.
But it's different to be a field agent. But there is something about these two young guys, as it were, almost two jocks, if you will, getting together, forming this relationship, this bond.
Do you see that, Jack?
Yes. I was going to say, Putin looks very athletic. Is he some sort of athlete?
Oh, boy. This judo, this karate, and he runs, and he, when he put on that short-sleeved shirt, if you happen to watch it on television, you saw
that's what I was thinking of,
those muscles.
So maybe he and George Bush were pumping iron at the White House. George Bush does that every day, right?
Well, they were out. That's what he says. It's conceivable. But, if we can come back to this notion about when President Bush looked into Putin's eyes, that's a fascinating story, because when I heard that and read that, it seemed so bizarre, because up until this point, when this took place in June this year,
yes.
Up until that point, basically they were saying they weren't going to meet at all. Bush was not going to meet Putin. He wasn't going to pay any attention to him. He criticized the Clinton administration for foreign policy based on personalities, and we weren't going to do that. We were going to have a new policy. And then they meet. And he not only has the meeting, but then says he looks into his eyes. It's a swoon. But I think I just discovered today what the origin of that was. It turns out, again, in that memoir that I've referred to now a couple of times, Putin describes how his mother gave him a wooden cross. And when Putin went to Israel, he took that wooden cross with him and had it blessed by a Russian Orthodox priest. Mm-hmm. He brought it back home. And once it was left in the house caught fire. Mm-hmm. And Putin, this was a memento from his mother and also very religious, and it was blessed and all that. And he thought, he was really very despondent. He describes that. And a worker went into the house, rescued the cross, and gave it to Putin. And he remembered that. Apparently, Bush read that story. And so when they met in Slovenia in June, Bush said, tell me about the cross. Our born-again president. And I have the feeling that when Putin related that story, this is when Bush said, "I looked into his eyes and saw his soul."
Wow. Marshall, push through the personal for a minute with us, because we saw a lot of that. What about at the policy level? If Bush wants to be a realist and wants to really pay attention to what's going on at the policy level, and of course Putin will at some level has to do the same, where are those interests meeting or not meeting right now between the U.S. and Russia?
Well, there's a certain commonality of interest where both of them say we can use this thing to get rid of some problems we have. Bush, you know, even before, when he was campaigning, said I'm going to reduce the number of missiles. We don't need 7,000 missiles, and I'm going to reduce it, although I don't think he was going to reduce it as low as he's now done. The same way Putin was doing, because he couldn't afford it. Bush just simply said, we want to restructure our military. Putin wanted to reduce, again, the military expenditure, so he closed down the two intelligence bases that weren't, you know, what do you need a base in Vietnam for, particularly with Russia's economic problems, or what do you even want one in Cuba? So the two of them, in some sense, found this mutual meeting as a way of accomplishing things that they wanted, were going to do anywhere or wanted to do, only in this case, it looks like they each gave a concession to get to win something.
And Jack, what do you see here as these two old adversaries find themselves on a new field?
Well, I wanted to ask Marshall about that. There are two criticisms, maybe more, but two I know of U.S. policy toward Russia in this post-Cold War period. One really comes from George Kennan, and it is basically, he made this at the time of the expansion of NATO to Eastern Europe, that this was, as he called it, a potentially historic mistake, the kind of thing you don't do to a great power. You don't expand your alliance up to the borders of the power the alliance was created to resist. It'd be tantamount to someone doing something like that in Mexico, and that perhaps not now, but sometime in Russian politics, this would spark a nationalist feeling against this sort of encirclement and so on. How has that gone, Marshall, since then, that particular, and how does that judgment of Kennan's look like to you now?
Well, it, you know, Kennan, after he wrote this famous article, you know, Mr. X, where he really called for isolating Russia, restraining it, kind of backed off from that. But, you know, Russia, as we look at it now, we look at it in retrospect, I mean, this pressure on Russia, Soviet Union, ultimately caused them to give up communism. And I'm not sure it would have gone much further. By the way, for that matter, President Bush's father, Senior Bush, seemed to want to be more flexible with Gorbachev because he, like most of us, never thought that the Soviet Union would collapse as quickly as it did, and communism, in effect, would disappear. So I'm not sure I would agree completely with George Kennan about that, although I would agree that we need 10,000-12,000 missiles for on each side.
Yeah, but I'm making the point particularly about the Clinton years. He made this in about 1992 when we were expanding NATO to Eastern Europe,
the
post-Cold War period.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, for that matter, we promised Gorbachev that we would not expand NATO, we would not do anything like that, and we did it. And I think the Russians view this as a reversal of where we stood and a betrayal. And it's also interesting how that's one of the reasons in this negotiation that's going on. Mm-hmm. Putin says, Bush says, well, okay, I'm just going to reduce the missiles and that's it. We don't have to.
My word ought to be enough.
My word ought to be enough. And then, right. And what does Putin say? He says, I trust you, but I want to verify it. You
the
know?
Old Reagan line.
<You
know? laughs> Wow.
And the second criticism has to do with the domestic arrangements made by Peter Redaway. He speaks of market Bolshevism,
yeah.
That's his word for the economic system. He thinks that we almost forced on the Russians with our economic shock therapy in the 90s and leading them to these massive sell-offs of state assets and all in the name of some pure idea of market capitalism that we don't even practice here at home and that we bear significant responsibility for sort of putting them on the wrong foot there in terms of their economy and in terms of their democracy by backing so uncritically this sort of besotted czar, Yeltsin. What do you say about that criticism?
Well, I agree that this was the wrong approach. I would hesitate. Peter's a good friend of mine. I hesitate to say that this was something we foisted on them, forced them. We did have advisors, you know, and then some of them were here in Cambridge who were advocating that kind of thing. But we didn't force the Russians to do it. The Russians ultimately have to bear their own responsibility for this. I've just finished a book which really looks at the same thing and criticizes the suggestions that we gave. But I also say that it was the Russians who wanted this. Gaidar in particular had been very much enthused by the market. He really never lived through it, but he tried to do this, and they did it the wrong way. They should have gone slowly, and they were going too fast.
Marshall Goldman, it's just about 10 minutes until Vladimir Putin joins NPR. But talk to us a little bit about his agenda for Russia today, inside Russia, and what does he need the United States, what does he need from the U.S. in that agenda?
What Putin is now presiding over an economy which has recovered in many ways. It's the last 2 years it's shown significant growth. Last year, almost 8% increase in the GNP. This year, about 5%.
One of the few counter-cyclical economies in the world right now.
China is doing much the same kind of thing. Well, the question is, what did Putin do it? Well, the answer is little. It turns out the main reason for this growth is because oil prices, until today at least, had risen from about $11, $12 a barrel to $30 a barrel. Russia is a major exporter. And suddenly there was this infusion of cash, balancing the budget, paying off the debt, collecting taxes. And in addition to that, the ruble, and after the financial crash of August 1998, collapsed. And the ruble lost three-quarters of its value, which meant that imports shrunk by half. That meant that this gave protection to domestic industry. But to Putin's credit, he took over at this point and he let it go. And he's introduced some important reforms led by his advisors. Taxes have been reduced to 13%. I mean, there's some Americans who a flat tax in addition to that. And he's also now reduced enterprise corporate tax, but he's trying to get rid of some of the regulation that restricts things, try to reduce the corruption. So a whole variety of things. I give him credit for that. What remains to be seen is whether or not the public will adopt these things. The laws are in the books, but that doesn't mean they'll adhere to them.
So is the 1990 stereotype of Russia as this kind of total economic basket case and a gangland kind of outlaw coming apart at the seams society, is that now behind us?
No, not completely. If you're doing business there, you still do it at great risk. I mean, I'm just working with a company that has just discovered that their assets were stolen. $8 million worth of assets were just taken away by the local governor, as it were, because they started making money. The minute they started making money, they took it away.
That doesn't work too well. Jack and Marshall Goldman, this afternoon, President Bush and Vladimir Putin were in Crawford, Texas. They talked with some school kids there. Let's hear a couple of the lighter clips from the press conference or a Q&A that they had with kids in Crawford.
The president and I have agreed to take a few questions from the students.
Только вопросы не по математике.
Only questions.
But not in math. No math questions,
please. Good idea. Particularly no fuzzy math questions.
My name's Jana Heller, and I'm in the eighth grade. And I was wondering, what is President Putin's favorite thing about Texas?
Мы знаем, что в России давно знают, что Техас – самый важный штат Соединенных Штатов.
We in Russia have known for a long time that Texas is the most important state in the United States.
There you have it, the George and Vladimir Buddy Roadshow in Crawford, Texas this afternoon with an audience of school kids in Crawford, the location of President Bush's Texas ranch. Marshall Goldman, there's a lot of great bonhomie there, but there's also big issues on the table here. Yeah. George Bush wants to do away with the ABM treaty from 1972 to put up the missile shield. Vladimir Putin has not agreed to that in this meeting. Where is this going to end up? Is there some harder stuff to come?
Well, I think that's going to be the hard one. I thought that this would they would resolve this one way or another. Certainly there seemed to be signals coming out of Moscow that they would work this out. Part of the problem, I think, is that Putin is getting a lot of flack at home. He's going against public opinion, and he's going against some of his military.
How so in particular?
Well, it was very interesting. His minister of defense, a man by the name of Ivanov, who's one of his buddies, he brought Putin, appointed him. Putin, they were together in the KGB, so this is somebody who's very close, who was noted for his anti-Americanism. About 4 or 5 days after September 11th, Ivanov said there is no basis for any hypothetical discussion about having NATO troops in Central Asia. And then about a week later, Putin overruled him. And he was just asked on Saturday by some American reporters, aren't you having trouble with this? He says, well, I'm the commander-in-chief. Well, you can still be the commander-in-chief, but you start overriding and embarrassing your staff like this, you're courting trouble. And the public opinion when asked, what do you think of the United States? 70% of the people interviewed said America is still our enemy.
So how should Americans be looking at Russia now? The all the body language and the patter of this meeting, and the earlier meeting of President Bush and Vladimir Putin said subliminally, hey, we're friends now, and especially in the war on terror, we're even allies. You can let your guard down. It's a new era. It's a new age. Marshall Goldman, what's the right view of Russia now?
Well, I think we should take advantage of this. This is a historic, this is a historic thing. We don't have all our problems resolved with France. I mean, but I hope we get to that.
200 odd years later.
we get closer to it. But I think we should, Putin, I have a lot of reservations for him. He suppressed the press. They're going after a lot of people for espionage. And there's a whole host of things and Chechnya is still not resolved. But I think we should really try to be supportive of him in this case. He's the best we've got and probably will have, and it could be much worse.
And is there a bill coming for all this friendship in Chechnya in terms of turning a blind eye or some other payback?
What is interesting about Putin is he said, I don't want anything in response, although, we have taken a softer line towards Chechnya. But it also happened that today I think we discovered some videotapes in what used to be some of Osama bin Laden's offices showing terrorism in Chechnya. So it looks like there is some justification for that. But not economically, Putin says, no, we just do our thing. And Putin, in fact, if anything, is saying, I'm going to be your supplier of oil. And that's one of the reasons why oil prices fell $4 since Tuesday.
Today. Jack Beattie, do you see the George Bush standing up for human rights in Russia anytime soon?
Well, I think that's going to be very difficult, given the overriding priority of the war on terror to him. And I notice how they kick their differences down the road on missile defense. You take missile defense out of it, and this would be an almost unmitigatedly bright picture, wouldn't it, Marshall?
Oh, I think it would. It would. I mean, look, there's still some other things. We're talking about freedom of the press with them. But, that has gone a long way. There's some other things, Iran, Iraq, North Korea. But there's a lot there in common. Mm-hmm.
Jack and Marshall, we're going to be going in just a few minutes to Robert Siegel and Vladimir Putin. I guess they're in New York tonight. Is that right, Marshall?
They are in New York.
Back from Texas, coming on for an unprecedented sit-down and chat, not only with an NPR interviewer, but with the American nation. Marshall Goldman, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Marshall Goldman is economics professor at Wellesley College and associate director of Harvard University's Russian Research Center. And Jack, thank you. We'll be talking again tomorrow night.
Thanks, Tom.
You can continue this conversation online. Go to WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage Forums. In just a moment, NPR's Robert Siegel talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin in New York. And they'll take your phone calls and answer questions from Americans across the country. Have at it. If you can get through on that line, you won't be the only one trying. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR Boston.